It's 5:06 and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Cynthia Schuster, in this week for Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll explore a new anti-violence initiative in Milwaukee.
First, spring and summer are prime travel season, and if you're wondering what to do for your next summer vacation, our guest can help you. He's traveled the world, and that's kind of putting it mildly. He's here in Madison occasionally to teach, including right now. Peter Greenberg is travel editor for CBS News and a distinguished scholar at the Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery at UW-Madison. Peter, welcome to Central Time.
Always. Central Time is where I like to live.
Yeah. It's a great place to be. You went to school here.
You bet. I owe my entire career to this university. I was here in Madison during the, I'm dating myself, but during the entire anti-war years, where the biggest presence on campus was usually the National Guard. But that's where I learned the art of journalism.
Well, things have changed some since then. You've gone onto an illustrious career traveling the world with heads of state. You just did a Viking cruise on the Rhone last week. What is it like getting to travel the entire world in this fashion for a career?
Well, let's put travel in perspective. It's the largest industry in the world. It's one out of every 10 jobs. It's 10% of global GDP. That's a staggering number. So most people think travel means vacation or holiday. I look at travel as news because it really is front page news, whether it's Malaysian Air Flight 370 or what the dollar is doing overseas that will affect your trip.
And in terms of things that are not as newsy but are just pleasurable, I know you think about it as an industry, but for most of us, it's a vacation.
For most of you, it's a vacation turned into an abusive experience. And then you come back, and wonder what you did wrong and how to fix it. That's where I come in.
All right, what did we do wrong? What do we do wrong when we go on vacation? We want to have a great time.
Okay, let's start out with something that all of you do wrong. I'm going to ask you this question. Are you ready? When you make a reservation on the airlines, do you go online?
I do.
Okay. Loser.
What?
I'll tell you why.
It's cutting edge.
No, it's not cutting. No, yeah. You just cut yourself with that. I'll tell you what happened. Only 52% of all the inventory is available online. You're only looking at the inventory they want you to see. You didn't have a conversation with a human being. They hold back. So you disenfranchise yourself from 48% of the available inventory that could make you a better deal, a better routing, a better city, a better experience. But you did it because it was expedient. You could do it at 3 a.m. in your bathrobe. You didn't have to talk to anybody. And wow, you hit the keystroke. Now you own a fare that you now are stuck with. And who are you going to call then? Ghostbusters? No. So for all of you who listen to this show, who love the internet, I'm not telling you not to use it. I'm saying research on it, but don't depend on it. It's not a Bible. It doesn't think creatively.
Are you suggesting calling every individual airline?
Talk to a human being. What a concept that is.
I don't know.
My God.
It takes a lot of time.
All right. Then it takes a lot. I'll give you an example. My staff had to get one of our engineers to New York at the last minute. They weren't staying over a Saturday night. They weren't booking 3 weeks in advance. It was a suicidal reservation, right? They said, oh, we'll do it on the internet. I said, I'll tell you what, book it on the internet, but don't pay for it. I'm going to teach you a lesson. So they came back 3 minutes later and they said, okay, we got it. Now, we knew it was going to be expensive, right? It was American Airlines Flight 34, one-way ticket from L.A. to New York, $809, leaving the next day, right? I said, great, let's go in the conference room. Let's get the speakerphone on. Let's call a human being at American Airlines. They get on the phone, and I'm acting like Joe Consumer. I'm not Mr. Special Secret Number.
Mm-hmm.
And I call up and I go, hey, what do you got going tomorrow morning from Los Angeles to New York? Oh, we have flight 34, same flight that they had gotten on the internet. I said, really? And how much is that? $809. So my staff was laughing at me like, I don't know what I'm talking about. I then said, hey, tell me something. Do you have a positioning flight tomorrow morning? I'll explain in a second. And she goes, hold on a second. She goes, as a matter of fact, we do. I said, really? What time does that leave? Leaves at 6:45. So that means it's leaving an hour and 15 minutes before the 8 o'clock flight? Yes. Is that a 767? Yes. Is it nonstop? Yes. Same kind of plane that you're using at 8 o'clock, right? Same two airports? Yeah. How much is that fare? $109.
What?
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
And I'll explain the positioning flight. So you know what my staff said to me? They said, oh, they're going to charge you $30 to talk to a human being. I said, do the math. I just saved you $670. Wow. Now, darling, do you want to discuss whether or not you want to use the internet or not?
Well, it's too late. I already booked my summer travel. But
now you've learned a lesson that you can apply. The answer to the burning question, what is a positioning flight?
Right.
I know everybody's asking that question. It doesn't happen every day. It doesn't even happen every week. But if you don't ask, you'll never know.
What is it?
An airline has to move a piece of equipment to another location to make it fly somewhere else. So they have to position the plane. They don't care who's on the plane. You go bowling on the plane. They just need to move that piece of equipment somewhere else. So if you happen to call up and ask and they've got it, guess what? you're in. But if you stayed online, it would never be reflected online. Look, the internet does not think in a creative way. It thinks in a linear way. For example, you want to go from Los Angeles to Hawaii. There are 5 or 6 airlines that fly that route. And they're going to charge you that rate. Well, what about getting a better rate? Guess what? The internet won't tell you this, but you can fly Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Hawaii. Los Angeles, Phoenix, Hawaii. You can even fly Los Angeles, Bellingham, Washington, Hawaii, and save $250 a flight by turning the map on its head. Will the internet tell you that? No. A human being will.
So let's
have I convinced you yet?
I'm convinced.
Okay, good.
I'm convinced. In fact, I'd like you to book all my flights from now on if that's an option.
Oh, yes, but there's a $5,000 service
okay,
fee for me.
Forget it then.
Yeah.
What if there had been no positioning flight? Then what?
Well, then you ask other questions. You ask, hey, you got a flight that stops in Chicago. You got a flight that stops in Dallas. You have a flight that stops in Birmingham, Alabama, or Raleigh-Durham. All of a sudden, you get more and more creative with different ways to get there, about different routes, alternate airports. Most people don't realize, for example, what's the secret airport to Chicago? Which one do you think it is? Midway? No, it's Milwaukee. Milwaukee is the secret airport of O'Hare. If you look at the parking lot of Mitchell Field, 1/3 of those license plates are Illinois plates. They know. And guess what? They didn't do that on the internet. They picked up the phone and talked to somebody.
All right, some old-fashioned but new again advice. Talk to a person.
What a concept. A human being.
All right. I wouldn't have believed it, but it's good to know about talking to a
person. And by the way,
person.
Last year I did a very special session at WID, the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery, called The Art of the Conversation. People have lost the art of the conversation. They don't know how to do it. My staff, all under the age of 35, but they're sitting where you are right now, they text me. No, talk to me. It's amazing what happens when you talk to somebody. You look them right in the eye, establish common ground, and figure out a way to do it.
Now, I want to mine your expertise a little. We've talked a little bit about how to get there for less money, which is pretty valuable.
Yep.
What about where to go? You've been all over the world. Tell us about some of the places that you've discovered that we may not know about that are worth going to.
Well, first of all, you want to be a contrarian traveler from the get-go. You don't want to think seasonally. You want to think experientially. So it's okay to go to Alaska in the winter. It's okay to go to Palm Springs in the summer if you know where to go and what to do. You get a much better deal. The whole concept of the off-season is a myth. It was started by a group of escaped Garmentos in New York who were freezing their you-know-whats off in February going, let's go to the Caribbean. And then they went. Well, what's wrong with going to the Caribbean in June and July? Nothing, except those Garmentos aren't there. Even better, they're not going to be there. So the temperature's about 6 degrees warmer. The deals are great. The service is better. You're not standing in line for a Diet Coke. Guess what? Life goes on. It's okay. So think in a contrarian way. Think shoulder season. And do what my parents did with me. I know this is going counter to what a lot of parents want to do, but you know what? It works. The famous Mark Twain quote, never let school interfere with their education. Take your kids out of school, get them an extra credit assignment for that week, and go the week after spring break. Go the week after Thanksgiving. Go the week after Christmas. You'll not only save money, they'll have a much better experience because you're not stuck in a line behind 7,000 demented other people.
So look at those other seasons. We don't have to go at peak travel season.
Absolutely not. Oh, you wouldn't catch me dead in Italy in July and August. In fact, if you caught me there, I would be dead.
Well, I want to pin you down. What are some places, taking that into consideration,
okay,
that we might not be trotting the beaten path with everybody else with their fanny pack and whatever else?
Oh, don't mention the fanny pack.
Where should we go?
Okay. Well, first, let's start with where the U.S. dollar is still king, where it still has some resonance. South Africa is one. Buenos Aires and the rest of Argentina is another. Go to a place like Slovenia. Which has a beautiful but small coastline on the Adriatic. It's only half an hour from Trieste and an hour from Venice, speaking of Venice. So all sorts of opportunities there if you're going overseas. That's where the dollar still has some strength.
And what about domestically?
Well, domestically, then, you have to just start thinking, we have 394 national parks and monuments in this country, and people are still obsessed with Yellowstone and Yosemite. Get over it. There are 392 other great national parks and state parks where you can have a great time and not stand in line for 7 hours and have a great experience.
So really, I hear you saying that your travel experience is going to be maximized if you do it without the herd, that you're going to have a better time.
It's no different than registering for classes at the University of Wisconsin. I don't want to be in a class with 700 other people.
You don't want to be on a cattle call. You want to be on vacation.
Exactly. And it works. you think as a contrarian in terms of your routing, in terms of your airports, in terms of your experience, in terms of the time of year. And that way you get to immerse yourself more in the culture. You get to have a much better time and you learn more. You actually experience it's a much better quality experience.
We're talking right now with Peter Greenberg. He is a travel expert in Madison today and teaching a course on travel writing this semester.
We'll take your calls next. Do you have any questions about trips or vacations you're planning? Where are you going this summer to get away from it all? And what's the best vacation you've ever been on, or maybe even some horror stories from the worst? You can call in and share your thoughts and stories at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email to talk@wpr.org.
We're continuing our conversation now about travel and travel writing with Peter Greenberg, author and travel editor for CBS News. He's in Madison right now, went to school here. He's here at the Wisconsin Institutes of Discovery.
And we're taking your calls. Do you have any questions about trips or vacations that you're planning? Are you looking for the best deals and need some tips on how to find them? You can call in at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org.
And I want to go to our phone lines because we've already got a lot of folks waiting to talk to Peter. So let's start with Katie in Toma. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I am so glad I turned on the radio this afternoon. my husband and I are planning a trip to South Africa with our four kids, and we're looking at November. And I'm just wondering, to get the best deal, not to go online, but to, have that conversation with somebody. Do I call an airline? Do I meet with a travel agent? What do I do?
On this one, a travel agent's not a bad idea. But remember, we live in a world of specialization. It's not the old days of the mom and pop travel agent that would send me on a cruise and send your kids to college. They specialize in specific areas or experiences. So one group was called Virtuoso. That's a consortium of travel agents that have experts in different regions of the world. Find one who's specializing in South Africa, and then you have to be very clear about what you really want to experience with your kids, what's physically capable or possible for that, and then what your budget is. Because November in South Africa is a great time of the year to go. Remember, it's Southern Hemisphere, so it's great weather. It's also high season. So you want to figure out how you're going to maximize your dollars, because the rand is still depressed against the U.S. dollar, so that's a benefit to you. That's number one. And then where you want to go in South Africa. It's a huge place. Do you want to go to some of the game lodges like Singita, or do you want to go in Kruger, or do you want to go further south down to the Cape? I really insist that you go to Cape Town. That's a place that once you come back from there, you'll wonder why you're not living there. It's that beautiful. Or the entire Western Cape, for that matter. And, if you have a sense of history, if you're in Cape Town, it's a 30-minute ferry ride and you're on Robben Island. And you can go out there and see exactly where Nelson Mandela was in prison and see exactly what they went through for all those years. And then how they've turned it into an island now of reconciliation and understanding. Amazing stuff there.
Well, good luck to you, Katie. I'm so glad you called, and good luck on your trip. And we'll go next to Laura in Trempealeau. Hi, Laura.
Hey, I got a question. I've got two younger children, 3 and 8, and we plan on doing state parks around the Midwest, but traveling to them and our short amount of vacation time that we do get with them, renting an RV versus renting a minivan, what do you recommend?
Well, if you're going to rent an RV, don't do the stupid thing. And the stupid thing is getting in the car and leaving. If you're going to rent an RV, take a driving course, because if you don't, you'll take out 15 cars every time you make a right turn. People don't realize how big those things are. Then go out and see the movie that starred Robin Williams about the RV, and then tell me if you still want to rent the RV. You know what? A minivan will be fine, because if you're just doing state parks, you're doing day trips. You don't have to live in the RV, unless it's a budget issue and you want to stay in the RV and not have to pay for a hotel room every night. I get that. Then go ahead and take that driving course. Just don't rent one and take it off the lot. Get a driving course and then realize where the campgrounds are. Most campgrounds these days for RVs are pretty sophisticated, which is great. They've got cable TV, they got wireless, they have great plug-ins, they've got great facilities there over and above what the RVs are just doing. And therefore, guess what? You're not packing and unpacking. You're not going out to dinner every night. You're eating what you want to eat. And you're meeting new people along the way because you all share one thing in common. You didn't take the driving course and you took out 15 cars on the way to that state park.
All right, Laura, there you go. Some solid advice about the RV, and good luck. Hope you guys have fun. And let's go next to Linda. Linda joins us in Green Lake. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I have a question about medical insurance while you're traveling internationally. our daughter will be traveling to Italy, and we'll need a visa because it's a long-term kind of study travel. And one of the requirements for the visa is verification documentation of having insurance. And I'm just wondering,
sure.
I've seen a lot of things online, but, you know, for $35, all these things are covered. And I think, really, $35?
$35 is not going to cover you. It won't even cover postage. Let me explain. There are three different kinds of travel insurance. One you never want to buy, which is called flight insurance. The second is trip cancellation and interruption insurance. And if you have a large investment in a trip, if you're on a $59 Southwest Airlines ticket, you don't need it. But if you have a huge investment in a trip like a cruise or a long-term stay like your daughter, you might want to buy that. But most importantly, you want to buy this insurance. It's called medical evacuation and repatriation insurance. And what that insurance means is that if you get sick or injured anywhere in the world, they're going to come get you and help you out. However, you have to read the fine print. There are two insurance companies that I like that do it. One is called Travel Guard, and the other one's called MedJet Assist. And the reason why I like both of those is if you read the fine print, if you buy the policy and you get sick or injured overseas, they will consult with your own personal physician, who knows your medical history better than your own doctor. And then they will send a medically equipped jet and fly you to the doctor and medical facility of your choice. All those other insurance policies, they'll fly you to the doctor and medical facility of their choice, and you end up in a bad HMO in Rwanda. I don't think so. So there's another website I suggest that you go to called InsureMyTrip.com because it analyzes and compares the language of these policies between the policies, which you can never understand to begin with. And then at least you can make an informed decision about which one you want to buy. But the $35 deal, forget it. Now, how much does the medical evacuation insurance cost? It's not inexpensive, but you amortize it over the year because it's an annual premium. It means you own it for the year. By the way, you should carry it too. I carry it. I hope I never have to use it. It's about $365. But now let's compare that to what it would cost you if you had to come home for medical treatment in an emergency. I can tell you because I saw it happen to somebody one day. A guy fell off a curb in Cairo, crossing the street, broke his hip. Okay? But it was in Cairo. They had to bring him back. They had to buy 4 first-class seats on the plane to hold a stretcher and bring a nurse. That's 5 first-class seats. His transportation costs alone were $87,000, not counting medical treatment. So it's the best investment you can make that you never hope you can use. MedJet Assist or Travel Guard, those are the two companies that I know for a fact that their policy language is pretty cool.
All right. Well, that's pretty helpful. Thanks a lot for the call, Linda. And Peter, I want to ask you, as our time here runs short, you've been all over the world, as we're hearing. You've been recently to Israel. You've been on a cruise in the Rhone in France. What is the last place you've been that has blown you away?
Well, every place blows me away, honestly. I never take it for granted. And every time I'm in Madison, it blows me away. Every time I'm in Madison, I'm amazed. I can't understand why I'm not living here again. I mean, you can't have a better city. Seriously, I'm not saying that because I'm in Madison. I say it to everybody. I bring them to Madison. Once a year, I drag 4 of my friends who have never been to Wisconsin because they fly over it. I drag them here. I drag them here for a football game. I do. But they walk down the street and they go, I had no idea. I had no idea. You know why? Because it's that cool.
I'm not sure you should be telling everyone about it.
I want to tell everybody about it because I owe Madison my entire career.
Oh, well, thank you. We're glad to have you back. And you're paying it forward to us now. And let's see, could we get another phone call? Yes. Brandon is with us in La Crosse. Hi, Brandon.
Hi. I'm traveling to Bahrain next year. I'll be teaching there for the next school year. And I have several opportunities to travel for a couple weeks at a time. And I'm looking at traveling in Europe. I was looking at Europass prices, and they seem kind of expensive. And I wonder if you have any advice on what kind of Europass to get, or if I should just go with, like, daily tickets or that.
Are you talking about a Eurailpass?
Yes, the Eurailpass.
Oh, okay. You can only buy the Eurailpass in conjunction with a ticket from the United States. So you have to buy it before you leave the United States. You can buy it in 1 week, 2 week, or 1 month increments. And you don't have to buy first class. You buy second class. You'll just be fine. But remember, you've got to buy it before you leave the United States. And one little plug for our little website here, it's petergreenberg.com. We had a committee meeting to discuss that name, but there you go. We are not a transactional website. We're updating every 18 hours because travel is news. We have all that information about those train passes and everything else on that website.
And our last 30 seconds here, Peter, I know you're teaching a course on travel writing. Is it good to write down your thoughts and your impressions so you can have them later?
Oh, you keep a journal on everything, because it's all about maintaining not only just the history of it, but putting it in perspective. If my mother hadn't told me stories when I was growing up about travel, I'd have no basis of comparison when I travel now. And you know what? It's really important. I mean, people should really do it, because it's an experience you want to share. Remember, travel is by definition an experience meant to be shared.
Peter, thank you so much for stopping by today. Appreciate it.
You got it.
That was Peter Greenberg, travel editor for CBS News and a distinguished scholar at the Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery at UW-Madison. It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Rob Ferret on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
After seeing an uptick in gang-related violence last summer, dozens of Milwaukee community organizations banded together to see what they could do to prevent a repeat.
That collaboration, which included several neighborhood organizations, the City of Milwaukee's Office of Violence Prevention, the Milwaukee Police Department, and a host of businesses and faith-based groups, led to the Bridge Project, which launched this weekend.
The Bridge Project is a campaign to inspire the people of Milwaukee to build bridges of peace and nonviolence. Its goal is to inspire hope and build bridges between communities to prevent crime and violence.
With us to talk about the project is Dawn Barnett. She's co-executive director of Running Rebels Community Organization, and Derek Schotz, a youth advisor for the organization called Violence Free Zone. Dawn and Derek, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Dawn, let's start with you. Give us an overview of what the Bridge Project is.
Sure. Well, the Bridge Project was, like you stated in the introduction, it was an idea from several different organizations from across the city to come together. Last year was really a difficult time here in Milwaukee. We had the exact number was 105 homicides in Milwaukee last year, which was the largest number that we've had in 6 years. And it was actually a 15% increase over 2012. So I think churches, community-based organizations, agencies, I think everybody just got to a point where they just said enough, no more. What is it that we can do to really start making an impact and to do something so that our city, the city that we love, doesn't end up in a terrible place? So an amazing thing happened. I mean, organizations throughout Milwaukee started acting in similar ways. We started having similar conversations. We started coming up with similar ideas. And it was actually a collective effort to say, hey, can we first of all showcase that we can come together in Milwaukee, whether you're from the north or from the south, or whether you're right wing, left wing, it doesn't matter what religion you are. Can we show that first we can come and do something in unity? And that's what the purpose of last Saturday's event was it was just the kickoff, just the start to say, hey, we can come together, unify in one message, and have one call to action. So even though it was a beautiful event, we did not want it to stop there, and it was never planned to stop there. It was just a kickoff to show that we can come together as a city.
And Derek, what about you and your organization, Violence Free Zone? From your perspective, how did this get off the ground? Did you come and approach others, or did someone approach you and say, come help us, we will be better together than apart?
I was approached by the people who are at the table of this project with the understanding that the people like myself and other youth advisors that work in the program serve as a natural bridge between, you know, the older generation and the youth that we serve. I have a real good relationship with a lot of the youth that I work with. I am stationed at Lincoln Center of Arts. So me and several other youth advisors were asked to be a part of this because they know the connection that we have with young people and how vital young people are to this project.
How are you engaging youth to get them on board with this?
Well, first, they need to understand what the city is facing and what's going on and how necessary the project is, because they may not know. They may not see the direction that the city is heading if we don't start supporting causes like this. So that's where it starts, and that's where the buy-in comes. And a lot of the youth that attended the ceremony are really excited now because they couldn't quite visualize it, but after they've seen the number of people that we brought out, and just how great the collaborative effort went, they're very excited now to be a part of something like this, and they know they played just as big of a part as anyone else in the project.
Yeah, how many people were there?
There was, we estimate between 300 and 400 people were there. It was really, it was kind of tough to tell in the rain there for a second. But I'll tell you, you know, we were at the bottom of the bridge in the Cargill grassy area. And from our vantage point at first, because just to give a quick visualization of how it went, south side agencies lined up on the south side of the 16th Street Bridge. North side lined up on the north side. And then just about almost in the middle on Canal Street, they met up and they joined together to march down Canal Street to the area where we were. So from our vantage point on the bridge, we could hardly see anybody. But when they came together and they marched down on Canal Street, unified as one, chanting as one, it was a beautiful, beautiful sight.
Wow. That sounds amazing. How do you, going back to Derek, you mentioned getting buy-in from the youth. What does it take to get that buy-in?
It first takes a lot of confidence when you're talking to the youth and getting them to believe in something that you believe in. Because if I don't believe in it, they won't either. So it's something that I definitely had to collect information on and see how important and how effective it could be. When I learned that it was something that was going to be ongoing and it was something for the whole city and not just any particular organization or any particular politician, that it was for everybody to be a part of and something that they wanted to continue to grow and go on for years to come, I definitely got more excited about it and I pushed my excitement on to the youth that I serve.
We mentioned the vast number of community partners that are a part of this effort. I think there are over 40 organizations involved. Is that correct, Dawn?
That's correct.
And how exactly do you plan to maintain, I guess, some sense of organization and perspective on how to keep all 40 of these institutions on the same path? Or is that not as important as simply working toward the greater effort?
No, it's absolutely imperative that we stay connected. And the great thing about Milwaukee is we do have some convening agencies such as Safe and Sound and the Medical College Violence Prevention Initiative, because like between the two of those organizations, they have several organizations that are under their network. So when you have convening organizations at the same table to where we can have a unified message that then spreads out to the networks that work with them, I think that's how we're going to be able to, you know, create an action that is kind of in unison and in harmony. And the wonderful thing is that that's what the Bridge Project has done, is it has gotten everybody at the same table so that we can continue on these conversations.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how violence happens. I mean, this is the impetus for this effort altogether. Maybe, Derek, I'll turn this next question to you. What do you do about violence? How do you go about identifying the source of violence and then digging in to get to the heart of it, to not only end it, but prevent it from happening again?
Well, I try my best to, like you said, first identify the source. And most like, you know, any other crime, violence occurs out of boredom or lack of other opportunity. If they're doing positive things and doing activities that we set forth and put in motion for them to do, the chances of them becoming violent at those times are very slim. We got huge buy-in from the youth with this particular project with the social media and the audiovisual portion, which is really key to the young people today. They like things like that. They like to be involved in that portion. So we got kids uploading videos and making videos, which is just a crave all throughout the USA, not just for positive things, but for anything, period. People want to be a part of social media and audiovisual. So that's one key piece that we're using in this project to keep people out of trouble and keep people engaged.
Mm-hmm. Dawn, what's your perspective on that?
Well, my perspective is that there's no one magic bullet, and you're not going to stop violence. You're not going to stop it altogether. But if we come together, we can make a huge impact. And I think that's the key point of the Bridges project. What Derek just mentioned is a way in which he and other people involved in his program are making a bridge. Now it's time to say, hey, what are other people's solutions to how you bridge that gap and how you affect violence in your community? And their answers are going to be, you know, it might be completely different. There might be some similar, you know, strings that run through it, but could be completely different. So now it's about, okay, what are people doing citywide to affect violence? And let's showcase those things. Let's highlight those things. Let's keep encouraging those things. And let's reward those things so that they can continue on. And I think that's how we're going to make an impact. No one organization, no one program can do it by themselves. Mm-hmm. It has to be a collective effort.
We're talking with Dawn Barnett and Derek Schoetz. Both are involved in Milwaukee's new Bridge Project, a massive collaboration between more than 40 organizations to build bridges between neighborhood communities and to fight violence in Milwaukee.
And we'd love to hear from you and have you join our conversation. Are you a member of the Bridge Project? Is this the type of thing you'd like to see in your community? And how do you think community groups can organize to come together to combat violence? Let us know your thoughts at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@WPR.org. You can also leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
It is no longer a choice between violence and nonviolence in this world. Is nonviolence.
Is the answer in the future or is it in the past? Because we need change.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Cynthia Schuster. We're listening to the anthem for Milwaukee's new Bridge Project. And we're joined by Dawn Barnett and Derek Schoetz to talk about that project, which strives to build connections between neighborhoods and communities to combat violence.
And we invite you to join the conversation. What are some of the ways you think we should combat violence in our communities? And what is the role of politicians, law enforcement, and other agencies in these efforts? Or is it up to the people to come together? Let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@WPR.org. You can also tweet us. @CentralTimeWPR is our Twitter handle.
We've been tossing that question to our listeners. What is the role of law enforcement and politicians in this effort? Now I want to turn that to our guests. Derek, let me start with you. What's the role of law enforcement here? In particular, I'm looking at Milwaukee's political dynamics a little bit. In Milwaukee, you've got a police chief, Edward Flynn, and a county sheriff, David Clark, with very different views on gun rights, for example, or versus gun restrictions. Do conflicts like that on the political sphere or with regards to law enforcement leadership make your job of reducing violence more difficult?
It does to a degree. And it makes it hard for me to piece together the importance of law enforcement with the youth that I work with and to get them to understand that we are all on the same side with a common goal, which is a safe city. But as long as they become involved in community events and show their faces and show the fact that they are human, they are part of this community and willing to help this community, it makes it a lot easier as well.
Dawn, what are your thoughts on that? Is the ultimate goal here some sort of policy change to help chip away at violence, or do we have to move beyond that and take matters into our own hands as individuals?
Yeah, I think it's beyond that because I think there's always going to be different beliefs. We're not, you know, the purpose of the Bridge Project, you know, really wasn't to change any policies. It wasn't to get people from the right to be like the people from the left or the left to be like the right or to change different views. It was to say that the things that matter most to us all are in jeopardy. So regardless of all our other opinions and our other beliefs, these are the issues that we need to come together on and say, hey, you know, even though we are of differing opinions, there are still some things that we need to act upon and act upon quickly and come together to show our support in a unified way.
Let's take your calls at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. We'll talk first to Frank in Burlington. Hi, Frank. What's your question?
Hi. No question, actually, but appreciate the call. One of the things that recently had happened, I'm a teacher. I teach art and, of course, always pushing the arts as a positive thing for students and the world. But a situation where a student of mine's artwork was wrecked because a student was bullying them. And so we took the artwork and sent them on their way with some instructions as to how to fix this piece of work that was damaged. And then Let's reflect on it. You know, one of the things that the arts do, and from Picasso's Guernica to something like a student artwork, is putting it out there in front of the world and making that visual statement. And the other thing it did for this particular student was it allowed them to become stronger as an individual and express themselves through a very public and nonviolent way. So that was a great experience for that particular individual. And now, you know, the work is hanging up and other people can respond to it and react.
Hmm. Thank you, Frank, for that call. Don, what's your take on that? And has the Bridge Project engaged arts organizations in the Milwaukee area?
Oh, absolutely. Arts organizations play a big role. They actually had some wonderful representation in the parade. We had this wonderful, these flags that were made and had names of everybody that had lost their lives to violence. We had a beautiful bridge that was created for people to sign by Vidal, who created this wonderful bridge for people to sign and pledge to be a bridge. Arts is a wonderful way for people to be able to express themselves. And I just, if I could comment as to that, I think that was a beautiful example of how to handle a situation like that. Because when a young person can come face to face and see how their actions have affected another human being, that is so much more powerful than any punitive action that you could take. That was an amazing restorative action, and I appreciate you sharing that story.
Derek Schultz, I wanted to also ask you, in your work with the Violence Free Zone, what other means of nonviolent engagement do you try to pursue, maybe to build bridges between individuals, victims of bullying and the bullies themselves, for example?
Any medium where two people can see eye to eye and enjoy themselves is always good, like art, like athletics. Athletics has always been real big in what we do because it teaches so much. It teaches character, teamwork, you know, all the things that come along with playing team sports. So that's one of the main outlets we use, and also just use honesty more than anything. We admit our faults when engaging with youth, and we encourage them to do the same, and with each other, which is something that they may have never even thought as being effective. If they can tell somebody that they may have wronged, that they have wronged them, and that person can forgive them, that can go a long way.
Don, at the start of the segment, you mentioned that last year Milwaukee saw 105 homicides just last year alone. You know, for Milwaukee residents, it seems like violence really can hit close to home for many people. But for those outside of the city, it might seem difficult to put violence into perspective. How do you show the rest of the state of Wisconsin that this is an issue that's worth paying attention to?
Well, you know, I think that over time it's going to present itself because, you know, the way that we're all connected and the way in which now, you know, these boundaries are starting to spread and spread, sooner or later, and now, you know, with the heartbreaking story in regards to what happened, you know, with the recent killings with the Jewish community, the Sikh temple shooting. I mean, these are examples of how violence is starting to creep out into other areas in which had not, you know, experienced, you know, recently that kind of violence. And you know, at one point or another, it's going to touch us all. It is going to. So I think that, unfortunately, our inability to contain life and to contain these types of things, it will show itself that it affects us all.
And Derek, what are your thoughts on that? How do you make others outside of the Milwaukee city limit engaged on this issue?
Continue to focus on it and strengthen it to make it worth being engaged from someone outside of the city. I'm pretty sure violence has no limits. Bullets have no limits. I'm pretty sure they're facing similar problems. So if they see that what we've done is effective, they have no choice but to acknowledge it and possibly collaborate with us.
You mentioned what a powerful event the march was on Saturday afternoon. How do you maintain that momentum going forward? What's next for the Bridge Project?
Well, we got some wonderful things coming up. you know, we have the Bridge Project anthem video premiere. You played a snippet, a teaser of what that song is, and it's going to be set to a wonderful video, which will show some powerful scenes that hopefully, you know, to your question of how do you engage other people in this movement, hopefully it will compel people. You know, hopefully the words of the song, hopefully, you know, as people really start to become intimate with some of these stories of violence and how it affects people. So that video premiere is going to be in June of this year. And then...
We will look forward to that, Dawn. Thank you so much. And thank you to Derek as well for being with us.
Sure. Thank you so much for having us.
It was Dawn Barnett and Derek Schoetz talking about the Bridge Project, a new anti-violence initiative underway in Milwaukee.